Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. A mass resignation hit CPS.
I was elected to fight for the people of this city. And whoever's in the way of that, get out of it.
Rather than fire the district's CEO or side with the mayor by taking out a high-interest loan, the entire Chicago Public Schools Board of Education will step down, adding a fresh layer of turbulence to an already chaotic school year, with the Chicago Teachers Union at the bargaining table.
Everybody has to compromise because there isn't all the money in the world available to do all the things that we'd all like to do.
And candidates running for the first time to serve on the CPS board. Voting is already underway in Illinois. The contest for president is looking neck and neck, bringing the candidates to the battleground states of the Midwest. Did a gentlemanly debate between their running mates move the needle? It is a tense time, but consumers can breathe easy at least. A quick strike at the ports keeps the supply chain safe.
Before we get to our Week in Review panel, a focus on the day's breaking, shocking, frankly, news. All seven members of the board that oversees Chicago Public Schools will exit this month. Joining us now via Zoom to give us the latest is Rima Amin of Chalkbeat Chicago. Thanks so much. Busy day for you, I know, because this is such a stunning move here. Can you explain why is this happening?
Yeah, where to start? But to make it as brief as possible, there have been reported tensions between Mayor Brandon Johnson's office, CPS, and CPS CEO Pedro Martinez for really months now as the district crafted its budget for this current school year. You know, the mayor disagreed with, cuts in the budget and publicly said so. And then eventually, you know, there was a lot of tension over the fact that CPS did not want to take on a $175 million pension payment. So that kind of ratcheted up the tensions. And then ultimately, the mayor's office asked CPS to take on a short-term loan to help cover that pension cost, as well as costs related to the new teachers union contract, still being negotiated. And so all of these tensions kind of culminated in a couple weeks ago when Brandon Johnson called Pedro Martinez into his office and asked him to resign. And I should say that the Board of Education, which is appointed by Johnson, has so far declined to take on that loan payment, passed the budget without approving the pension payment, and also has declined to fire Pedro Martinez. And so today is the latest in this turmoil. The entire board announced that it will be stepping down. And that statement was made in tandem with the mayor's office.
So where does that leave things? As you noted, these are members of the board who were appointed by Johnson himself, defying his desires. So what? Is this a sign of we're not going to do it and therefore we're going to exit? Or is this an agreement with him?
Yeah, so it has been very hard to get a clear explanation of why now? Board members have declined to comment beyond the statement that was released today. And we should say that the statement between the board and the mayor's office that was released to the press today said that this is actually just a transition move. Chicago is about to welcome a hybrid elected and appointed board that will be seated in January for the first time in its history. And, you know, the statement said this is just something we're doing to help facilitate that transition. And so that's the official word. But, you know, I've had sources tell me that that's not really the full truth, that there was a pressure campaign from the mayor's office to have board members step down. And as
if you're not going to get with the program, move on, essentially, is what the.
Yes.
OK, what does this mean for Pedro Martinez, the CEO, who, as you noted, is really at the center of this chaos? Does this mean that he will be losing his job in short order?
So we'll have to see, one could speculate that the mayor will now choose replacements for the board, right, ahead of the elected school board coming in. And so what the mayor could do is appoint folks that, move to fire Pedro Martinez. But what's important to remember is that Martinez's contract actually has clauses that either require him, if they want to fire him, they have to fire him for cause. So that means, accusing him of potentially something criminal, or something more simple like, you know, disobeying the board or making the district look bad. And the other option is to fire him, give him 6 months' notice, meaning he would stay in the position for 6 months and then would be owed, you know, many weeks of severance. And so it's still yet to be seen what will happen.
Rima, a change like this being made without the expectation from Johnson's office that there has to be a bigger change to come after the fact, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you know, I asked this very question to Deputy Mayor Jen Johnson, who, you know, oversees education policy in the mayor's office.
You worked for the Chicago Teachers Union as well, correct?
Yes. Used to work for the CTU. And, you know, she said, I asked her, is this something that the mayor wants his new whoever's coming next to do, to fire Martinez and to approve a short term loan? And, you know, she didn't directly answer that question. But she said, you know, we are trying to transform schools. That's why Brandon Johnson was elected. And, you know, the new board will have to figure out how to pay for these upcoming costs that are going to be right in front of us. And that's about as much as they would say.
So many unknowns here. We had, despite all of the reporting that the mayor wanted Martinez out and this change, the mayor, I know this week, denying that he had asked for Martinez to exit. So much there. Want to let you go, but just briefly here, how shocking, how big of a deal is this?
This has never happened before. A mayor has never replaced a board like this or has had to face that decision so quickly. And I feel pretty comfortable saying that this is going to be a very defining moment for his mayoralty.
Thank you so much for your perspective. We are very glad to have your expertise again on this breaking news of the day. We want to bring our panelists in on this discussion as well. So let's introduce them. Joining us this evening, Chris Jones from the Chicago Tribune, Amy Yee of the Chicago Sun-Times, and also Alden Lowry of WBEZ. Also from Washington, D.C., via Zoom, Lynn Sweet, also of the Chicago Sun-Times. Let's stick with CPS for a bit. Chris, I want to stick with you. As Rima noted, the mayor said that this is about stability, a transition so that you can have some of the appointed members of the board sticking on come January when those who win in the November election will join. Do you buy that?
No, I don't think anybody buys that. I don't think anybody on the board buys that. I'm not sure even the mayor would buy that. That's clearly, you know, what's gone on here. I think this is a sort of cowardly move on the part of the board, just to put it bluntly. I don't know which of them support the mayor in this issue of the loan and in the issue of the firing of Mr. Martinez, and I don't know which of them are opposed to it. And I think that's what they wanted. I don't think any of them wanted to show their hands. So the people that wanted to work with the administration wanted to, you know, sort of keep their bona fides, they're okay, and the people who wanted to oppose it don't have to oppose the mayor. And I think it's ultimately not a good thing. I think we should have transparency, and we should be clear why are these board members resigning, person by person. What are their reasons? Is it the same reason? Is it different reasons? Who believes what? Who supports the loan? Who does not? Who supports Mr. Martinez? Who does not? We don't know any of it, and there is zero transparency.
Yeah, nobody seems to know, or is at least speaking on the record, and I know a lot of education journalists have been asking those questions,
right.
And you're not hearing anything from the members of the board. Alden, can you weigh in on that? They were chosen to do this job, right?
Right. I think, you know, Chris is right. This we don't know exactly why. The fact that all seven are resigning in one fell swoop is an indication that there is at least some level of agreement that, you know, we're all in the same boat in some way. I'm wondering if there were some board members who were really adamant about wanting to depart. And then there were others who were maybe a little on the fence, and the sense was maybe as a sign of solidarity, well, let's just all step away. We don't know, but I think the reasons why this is occurring perhaps will become clear once we see what happens from here on out. The mayor's going to pick seven new people to fill those seats. Those people are going to have to decide ultimately on whether Martinez stays or goes. They're probably going to be a big part of whether or not we get this loan and how they're going to handle their budget situations. And then, of course, the CTU contract. So
And what's at play there in the contract, Alden?
Well, I don't know the particulars in terms of the contract, but yeah, I know that there is there's a significant level of increase that the union is seeking, particularly considering the district's strained finances is a really big ask. So when this all shakes up at the end of the day, I think it'll be revealed to us maybe why we are where we are.
Lynn, hoping that you can weigh in here. Is this a rebuke of the mayor's agenda? He has said that he was elected to change Chicago's schools, chose these people to carry out that mission, and now really in a relatively short amount of time, flipping the script.
Oh, hold on. There is a big difference between change and chaos. This is not change. If Brandon Johnson becomes a one-term mayor, let's timestamp it for these days surrounding the school board mess. This is not how you make people, make parents want to put their children in public schools. And this is a test of the Chicago Teachers Union. Just today, they dumped another, at least 140,000 in different committees to try to influence this school board election that now is underway in our city. So let's just get it straight. This is not how you do change. You don't do change and then have your own hand-picked school board quit on you. So in the middle of this all, you could find seven other people who are not up to speed. Let me make a quick prediction. Do you really think this is not going to cost our taxpayers in Chicago millions maybe of dollars in litigation over what may happen, not only in what happens to Pedro, the top chief,
contract.
The school contract, but do you really think that if the school takes out what some have called a payday loan to pay CTU increases, that there's not going to be lawsuits about it? Then let's get real here.
Last word to you on this topic, Chris. Just there is so much tumult, and I know our alderman already sent a newsletter out saying, I'm disturbed by it, and I would consider my local alderman, frankly, to be one of the mayor's allies. Where does this leave him with the city council and just in general his power beyond CPS?
Well, I think with this and other issues like ShotSpotter, it leaves him in a very vulnerable position with city council. I think all of this stems from what he should have done is recuse himself in terms of matters relating to CTU.
That was never going to happen, you think?
It doesn't mean that it wasn't the right thing to do. I mean, everybody knows that they helped elect him. He should have said, look, I'm going to stand apart from this. I'm going to, you know, stand for what I believe in. And my job is to take care of the interests of the city, not CTU. Now he's in an ever-compounding mess as a consequence of not having the backbone to stand up there and say that. And that's it. As Lynn says, it's an unspiraling element of chaos in the city.
And Lynn wants to say more. Lynn, back to you. What were you trying to get in there?
This is a mayor that was bought by the Chicago Teachers Union, everybody. Right. They are getting what they paid for. And Mayor and your team, if you're listening, I know this sounds harsh, but you know how this got started and you know who bankrolled your campaign and you know who you're listening to. Okay, this is the result of how the mayoral heir of Brandon Johnson was spawned. And this is what it has brought us to this precipice that we're on now.
Chicago families all waiting to learn what this means for them, particularly those who have school-age children. Meanwhile, we're also going to have to wait at least a couple more weeks to learn what the mayor's vision is for the overall city budget, which is facing a deficit, as we noted, in part because CPS shifting pension costs back to the line there. You know, Alden, is there going to be an extra couple of weeks for the mayor to cook up a budget going to make any difference, do you suppose?
I don't know. The mayor's in a really tight bind here. If CPS gets this loan, if the mayor is able to, in some kind of way, if he's willing to kind of go back on his promise around property taxes, that could be a potential fix. But you know, close to $1 billion deficit. I mean, in previous budgets, most recent budgets, I mean, we were talking about, you know, I don't know, fraction of that. So I don't see an easy way he gets out of this. And, you know, all of this really, I think, is also just one last point on the CPS thing. I see this as like a real legacy moment for him. I don't know how he escapes being remembered for anything other than this. You know, Lightfoot had the pandemic. Rahm Emanuel had the Laquan McDonald video. He had the closure of the schools. Unless your name is Daly, I don't know, you can have controversy.
Daly at the parking meter fiasco.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, let's not forget that one. Yeah. Nobody is.
So yeah, I don't see how he gets out of this.
What his administration will be known for. Now let's move on to find out who might be leading our country a little bit here. I want to begin actually talking about the vice presidential debate. It was everybody here watch it? Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So, Amy, I'm going to go to you. What are your big takeaways here from that debate? Do you think it's going to make a difference?
Well, I think it was not as bombastic as I expected. It was, you know, even as our Sun-Times headline says, you know, Midwest nice. And it was, like, surprising to see both Vance and Walz kind of trading off compliments here and there. That surprised me. And that they seem to have some common ground on some issues, too. I think the consensus on the debate was that it doesn't change very much, but at least it got to, you know, showcase these two candidates for the first and last time before the election. I mean, I was a little surprised that Walz's performance wasn't as strong as I thought it would be as a sitting governor. And he seemed more nervous and anxious than I expected.
And, Chris, one of the other big takeaways, I think, came toward the end when a question was asked, actually not by the moderators, but by Governor Walz. Do you abide by the results of the 2020 election? Is that something that should last in voters' memories and be the takeaway, or is that just what the Harris campaign wants?
Well, I think Vance is that's his existential problem. He can't please Trump and he can't say what is good for the American people at the same time. He had a very good debate, I thought. I thought he won the debate to the extent that you can define winning a debate in rhetorical terms. He certainly was the more sort of articulate person of the two in that debate. I think you could say he made a better case for Trump than Trump makes for Trump. And I also think that you could say that the debate was more to what Americans expect from a debate. It was civil. Both candidates were respectful. It was like, thank God for that, after having Trump in the other debate. But Vance has this problem where he can't sort of upset the boss. And he knows that, and he's made a Faustian bargain in refusing to say that, in fact, that, you know, the election was the election. He can't do it, and that's his problem, and it's insurmountable for him, I think.
And, Lynn, to you in Washington, because we are, you know, about 30 days plus or so out from the election, but people can already cast their votes here in Illinois and in Chicago specifically as of this week. What is your assessment of the race?
Well, I quickly want to say on the debate that the moment at the end about the election denialism is lasting more than the debate story, because that is being sent out on multiple social media platforms, free media, paid media. So for those sliver of people in those seven swing states for whom this matters, that message will get out. So where do we stand now? It's a tight race. President Obama is going out on the campaign trail in swing states now for the ticket, finally, but Obama does things when he wants to do it. You have an abundance of cash that Harris has going for her to spend money on the campaign things, and you have Trump and Vance also focusing on the states. We have in Illinois volunteers being volunteers going to Wisconsin and Michigan because we're well positioned to do that, and there's no presidential race in state. So we're an export state when it comes to volunteers, and a lot of our elected officials are also on the road. By the way, Mayor Johnson was also planning on being on the road for the ticket. He's also planning to go to London. I guess maybe he'll be there when the Bears are playing, and we'll see how that pans out as the city's in crisis. Right, everyone? All stories are one. But that's where we're at right now.
Johnson going to London while the bears are there, and we have Governor J.B. Pritzker ahead of the election, in fact, maybe packing his bags right now so that tomorrow morning he can head off to Japan. Amy, I know you cover the economy. Any notes there in terms of why we have our leaders heading overseas?
I don't know why they're heading overseas, but as everyone will say, the economy is probably the number one thing on most voters' minds, especially critical voters in swing states. And it does come down to, are people able to make ends meet? Are they able to pay for gas, for groceries? And we all know inflation has been one of the overarching huge issues of the last few years since the pandemic. And so people will, you know, if they go to the polls and they're feeling like they are struggling, you know, that is what it may come down to. Can people make ends meet?
Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I do think, you know, I can be critical of the mayor, but I do think he's right to go to the Bears game in London and schmooze with the business interests there. It's a major media market. It's the Chicago Bears. You'd expect the mayor of Chicago. That's nothing wrong with that.
And the taxpayers aren't paying for the trip, by the way,
quickly,
if anybody's curious about
quickly,
that.
Go quickly, come back, and sort out the mess we were talking about earlier.
You know, Alden, before we move on from the election... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Lynn.
He's going to Japan because Rahm Emanuel is the ambassador there. It's 40 people. When you look at who's going, it's
a veritable who's who.
Yes, it's more of kind of, if we're doing the Bears analogy, it's kind of like a tailgate party before the end of Rahm Emanuel's tenure in Tokyo. So let's kind of take it for what it is. You don't need 40 people. And when you look at the list who's going, to do whatever they're doing. I'm sure there will be worthy things, but I just want our listeners to know that they are going to have a Rahm Emanuel heck of a reception when they get there.
Yeah, before Emanuel moves on, particularly should there be a change in who runs the White House, and included in the delegation, by the way, developers, including the developers who are hoping to get some state money to build a stadium at the 78. You know, Alden, I just wanted to briefly go to you because as a thoughtful member of the media, what do you think of how the coverage has been? We've had now special counsel Jack Smith court filing over President Trump's efforts to stay in power after losing 4 years ago, saying that he resorted to crimes. Do you feel like this is getting the coverage that it deserves, or how is that would sink a candidate regularly?
Yeah. Wow. This is an incredibly tight tightrope to walk here because certainly the pressure on prosecuting Donald Trump, while it has legitimacy certainly across the board, the timing and the fact that we're right in the middle of a very contentious presidential election, it's hard for at least the appearance of partisanship, the potential partisanship being a part of the prosecution, and the Trump campaign is really leaning big into that, almost kind of making him out to be a political martyr in some respects. And like I said, given what the timing of all of this, it's hard for people not to give some credence to that. I think we've heard a lot about the prosecution. We've started to hear some details now. This is the first time I remember, you know, hearing about some of the backstory that was going on, some of the conversations the former president was having leading up to the January 6th, so that this was apparently something that was on his mind. The big question is it criminal? You know, is it actually a crime? And that's the thing that I think is still to some degree difficult. And again, if this goes down, considering we're right on the doorstep of the election or potentially right after the election when he could be reelected, I just don't see how this does not, you know, come off as a big partisan mess.
Well, thank you for that. We are nearly out of time, so we want to make sure that we thank our panelists, Chris Jones, Amy Yee, Alden Lowry, and Lynn Sweet. Also, thanks to Rima Amin from Chalk Beat Chicago. We are back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Chicago Tonight, Week in Review, is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown, and the Mollenhauer Progressive Philanthropic Fund, in honor of Ida Mollenhauer, supporting quality journalism. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and The Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website, WTTW.com/news. And make sure to tune in tonight at 8 for the premiere of Chicago Stories Amusement Parks. For an even deeper look, head online for a digital exclusive. Yeah, it's a bit of a twist and turn from Week in Review duties. I got to visit Six Flags Great America to ride the American Eagle. It was a good time, let me tell you. Amy, before we end the show, I want to go to you, and can you share that we had this strike until January 15th, but it's suspended. We thought there was going to be a strike. Now it's been suspended. What went on?
That's right. So that is one piece of good news from this week, is that a dock workers' strike on the East and Gulf Coasts that were going to basically shut down those ports has been suspended until January 15th. So dock workers will be back at work. You'll be able to get your bananas and your Christmas presents.
Although bananas and Christmas presents, the important stuff.
I mean, I'm joking, but supply chain was another huge problem during the pandemic, where goods and products and parts were all backed up at ports, and so, you know, the society was, it was hard for the economy to function. So,
and this could have changed the whole tenor of the election.
For sure, it could have. And it could have cost, you know, billions of dollars in economic impact. So people were braced for, you know, the possibility of, you know, another hit to the economy just when it looks like it's sort of reviving and inflation was down. So,
why is there a strike so quickly?
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its 20 attorneys recognized in the 2025 edition of the Best Lawyers in America.